For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome one and all to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell, and once again, an empty chair. Because Mark is out. Tim, you did your mastodon hunting
a couple weeks ago
and weren't with us.
Yeah, brought in some mastodon steaks.
Well, Mark is out, and from what he's told us, mastodon steak doesn't hold up well.
Ooh.
And, you know, so...
must have turned.
Yeah, so he is not with us this week. We wish him all the best. No, actually... Mark is taking a day off to do some things with family and that kind of thing. So, you know, even cavemen have families. So we wish him well on whatever he's doing out there today. We're going to take on kind of a different subject today. A couple weeks ago, we had Matt Nelson in from Catholic Answers talking about his book, Just Whatever, talking about spiritual indifference. And one of the challenges that he brought up is the fact so many people out there really have no firm beliefs. They're, you know, we're in that relativistic world where, you know, my belief is just as good as your belief, is just as good as the next guy's belief. And, you know, none of them have to be really firm or really strong or anything else. And so Matt Nelson was bringing us around to taking a look at, you know, how do you get to those people? Well, today we're going to be talking with Carlo Broussard from Catholic Answers again. About his new book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. And this is the book for those of you who are engaged with evangelization and find yourself running up against the tough questions, running up against those who do have firm beliefs and are ready to challenge yours. So we're going to take a look, and we'll be calling him here in just a couple minutes. Tim, you've had a chance to look over the book. First views.
I love it. And I'll tell you why it's so helpful, the way he has structured the book with important strategies, the way he's organized it. Kind of, we're going to see, we're going to move from the important topics like truth and God into our Lord, into Christianity, and then into the Catholic Church, and across those sort of five big pillars, if you will, that really sort of till the soil for the seeds of faith. And in fact, that's something where I think we're going to get, we'll have to talk to Carlo about. But the book itself, I highly encourage you picking up a copy, which you can get at Catholic Answers, but you can also pick up at Amazon, because it's one of those rare finds where you're able to both read it cover to cover, or you can simply, by using the table of contents, you can zero in on, say, specific topics and objections or challenges that you may face, and just read that particular, you know, short little section to equip yourself to engage thoughtfully and charitably with others who disagree with us as Catholics. Or they actually, a lot of time on some of these issues, they're also Catholics, but maybe under a misunderstanding. And something, Kent, too, I know, you know, we all are seekers of the truth. And so by engaging in topics like this, it's always important to exercise a little humility, right? In that none of us have all the answers, but together, through conversation, through reading good books like this, engaging in others who maybe have studied some of these topics a little bit more by trying to grapple with what Holy Mother Church teaches, we can ascend in our knowledge, our understanding, and grow in wisdom. That's going to lead us. The more truth we possess, the more virtue we have, the more we imitate our Lord, the closer we grow to the ultimate object of our love and desire, which is our Lord and our Lady and Holy Mother Church. And so we're going to have to get Carlo here in the cave so we can talk to him about this really invaluable contribution he's made, Prepare the Way. And when we come back, we'll have Carlo here in the cave, and we'll jump right in.
Sounds good. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Carlo Broussard here on The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest, or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
Start your weekend off right with Catholic Radio Indy's Saturday morning lineup. Join James Littleton for Forming Faithful Families at 9, followed by the pro-life message of I Choose Life at 9:30. Then enjoy today's music with a Catholic message at 10 on Catholic Jukebox Indiana. At 11 o'clock, we'll share an hour of Catholic thought and philosophy on the Catholic Cave. And at noon, it's time to grab a bite, sit back, and enjoy some food for thought with two episodes of Faith in Action. That's the Saturday morning lineup from your source for 100% Catholic programming, Catholic Radio Indy.
It makes me feel good. It makes me a joyful person.
Through you guys and the work that God does through you, it's brought joy to the people that I'm around because I'm a different person because of you guys.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. Once again, in the cave with me, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. And on the phone line, we have a familiar voice on Catholic Radio Indy. You'll hear him doing Ready Reasons for Catholic Answers. This is Carlo Broussard. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Hey, good morning, guys. It's great to be in the cave with you.
Hey, it's great to have you back. I am super excited to have you in the cave this week. One of the things that I'm excited about is, one, I just admire your work. I just want to start there. I admire your work. You've done such a great job, Carlo, of taking a lot of these philosophical and theological axioms and principles and of the faith and articles of the faith, and you just do such a good job just breaking those down into terms that we can all understand. And As a philosopher myself, I really admire when the gift that you have to take some of these more, what can be at times kind of lofty philosophical sure. principles and put them in the hands of the average lay person out there. So, and that's what we're going to do today, because that's what you've done. We're going to go down that path because that's what you've done in your new book, which called Prepare the Way, which is Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. And so, Carlo, where do you want to start?
Yeah, well, first of all, Timothy, I guess we can start with the title, Prepare the Way. When I tell people that's the name of my book, sometimes they have sort of a blank stare until I give them the subtitle. But it's inspired by the ministry of John the Baptist, of course, who is the voice crying out in the wilderness to prepare a way for the Lord, lowering the mountains, filling the valleys, coming from the prophecy in Isaiah chapter 40. And in my personal devotion and in my prayer life, Tim, I've always asked John the Baptist to intercede for me as an apologist, because I've always seen the work of apologetics akin to the ministry of John the Baptist, preparing the way for the Lord, because basically that's fundamentally what we're doing a lot of the times in apologetics, is just trying to remove the various obstacles that people have that impede them from encountering our blessed Lord. Whether those obstacles are intellectual or emotional, of course, the book focuses primarily on the intellectual obstacles with some emotional obstacles, but obstacles that prevent them from encountering our Lord as he approaches them bearing the gifts of truth and life. So what I wanted to do in the book is I wanted to provide the Catholic world with sort of a coaching manual, a manual that coaches the reader in strategies on how to remove the various obstacles that unbelievers and skeptics face. So obstacles to truth. How can I believe in truth when people believe so many different things? Or it's intolerant to say you're right and somebody else is wrong and make an absolute truth claim. Or how can I believe in God when there's really no good arguments out there, right? Or there's no scientific evidence out there. Or How can I believe in God when there's so much evil in the world? And when it comes to Jesus, skeptics to Jesus and Christianity often will say, well, how can I believe in Jesus when I can't even trust the historical reliability of the Gospels, right? Or how can I belong to a religion that's just nothing but violent religious fanatics? So these are the types of obstacles. And then, of course, when it comes to the Catholic Church, unbelievers have their beef with the Catholic Church as well. You know, why should I join a church that, you know, doesn't respect the rights of women and hates gay people and all of these common myths that are prevalent in contemporary culture that constitute the narrative that the culture has constructed to try to paint the Catholic Church in a bad light. So in the book, Prepare the Way, I take these five sections: prepare the way for truth, prepare the way for God, prepare the way for Jesus, prepare the way for Christianity as a religion, prepare the way for the Catholic Church, and coach you in strategies to remove these obstacles. And each of the strategies have questions peppered in there that you can ask your friend to guide the conversation along, to draw out ideas and expose flawed fundamental assumptions. So the questions are not meant to be snarky or anything. They're just simply meant to be helpful to guide the conversation along. And it's a very patient approach. So it's a step-by-step approach. I tell you, you know, do this, do that, ask this, ask that, think about this, get your friend to think about that sort of thing. And so that's sort of that's the rationale behind the title, Prepare the Way. And that's sort of the gist of the book itself.
I really appreciate that framework that you've laid out there, Carlo, because it's, you know, sometimes we, a mistake that we can make in our, you know, enthusiasm and desire to share the faith is we can get into a mode where we get very prescriptive, where we get, like, we're telling, right? We're saying, this is the way it is. And that tends to break down, you know, conversation and dialogue.
It creates more obstacles.
Correct. Yeah, more tension. Right. Often turns ad hominem too. Which I love the way you're talking about doing apologetics in this with sort of a coaching philosophy, a coach approach. Meaning, as I understand what you're doing here, is you're helping them by providing us with good questions to raise. That you're helping, we're going to help the person come to realizations. And by them coming to realizations versus being told, then we're much more likely for them to ascend in their knowledge and understanding and opening up to possessing more truth. Being here in central Indiana, you know, I think about what your book is up to, analogous to, you know, when pioneers came to the state of Indiana. You know, it was covered in forest, and they had to transform that into farmland in order for the soil. I mean, you can drop corn seed in a forest. It's just not going to grow. But once you clear the land, you remove the boulders, the obstacles, and that can you till the soil, then the soil's ready to receive the seeds. Just like that's what your book does, right? Is it sort of tills the soil of the soul so that we can be open to and disposed to receiving that the seeds of faith.
Yeah, and actually I employ that very metaphor at the end of the book in the conclusion. So the book starts with the motif of John the Baptist and preparing the way for the Lord, lowering mountains. So that is lowering those obstacles that constitute the presence of something standing in the way, filling the valley. Sometimes it's the absence of some sort of evidence that we need to feel. But at the end, in the conclusion, I employ the metaphor of tilling the soil and preparing the soil to receive the seed. And that's exactly, I mean, both metaphors work for the book because we're preparing the way for the Lord with regard to these topics of truth, God, Jesus, Christianity, and the church. And, you know, the reason why I chose these topics, because in the modern apologetics movement that was sort of reignited by our founder, Carl Keating, in the late 80s, early 90s, was focused on the Catholic-Protestant dialogue. And that was those were the questions that were weighing heavy on many Catholics. And, of course, those questions still weigh heavy, and that dialogue still exists, and it is not a dead horse. It's just a horse that keeps coming back, right?
Right, right.
And so those questions always need to be asked and always need to be answered. But we find ourselves in an age of unbelief, where unbelief is on the rise, with the rise of nuns, you know, those who are not affiliating themselves with any sort of religious tradition. There's just this sort of apathy with regard to the major questions of truth, God, Jesus, Christianity. And so I wanted to provide a book that sort of cataloged these various questions that unbelievers and skeptics ask, which I present as obstacles standing in their way to encounter the Lord, because there's not too many books out there that sort of catalog these secular objections to these topics. Of course, Peter Crafe and Ron Ticelli's book, Handbook of Christian Apologetics, does that in a brilliant way, but it's super massive.
Yeah, and it's quite a tome.
Yeah, it's a tome, and it's quite difficult to assimilate the, you know, 1-2-3 punch in your own thought process relative to some particular topic. So that's what I wanted to do in my book. So I give you a particular target, you might say, and I give you distinct specific arrows to put in the quiver that you can remember to pull out. And whenever you're presented with that target, you know which arrows to pull from the quiver in order to hit the target. So that's why I presented in the book the fundamental topics. In traditional philosophy, in Catholic philosophy, we'd say it's the preambula fidei, right? The preambles of faith, talking about truth itself. We can't talk about God until we first get off the ground with, is there such a thing as objective truth? And then we can't even talk about Jesus unless we first get right with the question of God's existence. And we can't even talk about Christianity as a religion unless we first get the Jesus question right? So these are some of the most fundamental, and in fact, these are the central core topics of classical apologetics, you know, and dealing with apologetics with these fundamental truths. So that's what I wanted to present in the book, and I think people who read the book will walk away with a good sense and a confidence and a good sense of how to navigate in these waters of truth, God, Jesus, Christianity, and then, of course, these specific obstacles that unbelievers face with regard to the Catholic Church.
Yeah, we are talking with Carlo Broussard from Catholic Answers, and talking about his new book, Prepare the Way. You know, a couple weeks ago, we had the opportunity here in the cave to talk with Matt Nelson about his new book, Just Whatever.
Oh, wow.
And
good friend.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
He talks about the getting past the indifference. And your book is a perfect adjunct to that, in the fact that, you know, he gets you past the indifference. Now you're taking on those who really care, who, you know, have a position, who have questions, and who, you know, maybe are the right ones who want to put up an argument. And you supply us with, you know, the ready reasons and the background that we need to take on those arguments.
That's right. I'm actually presenting you with the information that you need to actually engage in the conversation, on condition that the person is willing to enter into the conversation. I don't present any tips on how to sort of stoke the fire and get the flame going when it's dormant. That is to say, if a person doesn't really care, how do I draw them in? The book is presented on the assumption that the individual to whom we're speaking is the one actually asking the question. Now, of course, it doesn't necessarily come out as a question in dialogue. Sometimes when you're in conversation, you may be listening. First of all, we have to listen, right? We have to be on the lookout to try and find where the person is itching so that we can scratch, right?
Right.
And very often when we're listening, if we listen carefully, we'll be able to identify those fundamental obstacles that are keeping them from embracing the truth about objective truth or God, Jesus, Christianity, and the Church. And very often, it comes out in the form of, you know, well, how can I believe in an all-good God when there's so much evil in the world? How do you expect me to believe in God when there's so much evil? For example, I was on an airplane a couple of months ago traveling to give a lecture, and I was sitting down, and I was reading my manuscript, preparing a particular chapter in the manuscript, preparing for the lecture, and the gal sitting on the side of me noticed, she was peeking over my shoulder, and she noticed what I was reading. She said, "Wow, that looks like some interesting stuff you're reading, huh?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "What is it?" I said, "It's my book." She said, "Well, wow, that's impressive. What is your book about?" So I was able to start telling her. And then, of course, lo and behold, it comes out, you know, well, how do you reconcile, you know, what do you have to say about evil in the world and an all-good God? Like, how do we reconcile that? And so I was able to share with her a few things that I present in the book. And she said she, you know, doesn't really go to church, but she might start thinking about going to church and all of this stuff. But the point being is that in the conversation, I was able to listen to try to find out what was her hang-up. And lo and behold, that's what it was. And the reason being is that, you know, her husband left her for the woman. He was trying to win her sons over away from her, and she's just having a lot of problems. So she was seeking help, asking questions. And so I was able to employ some of the strategies that I have in the book to help her out and plant some seeds. And she seemed very receptive of it. So we have to be able to listen to those people when they tell their story. And that simply can be started by asking the question, you know, if they say X, you say, well, why?
Why do you feel that way?
Why do you feel that? Why do you make that conclusion? Just get them to tell their story, and because everybody loves to tell their story. And once they start telling their story, then be on the lookout to identify those obstacles and certain assumptions that they're making or basing their conclusions on, and then that's when you know where to go, you know which avenue to take. And then the book, knowing which avenue you're going to go, what's the target I'm looking at, from knowledge of reading the book, you're able to employ the specific strategies that address that specific obstacle.
Let me ask you, Carlo, let's walk through one maybe to give the audience kind of a sense of what you're talking about. So in your first section of the book, which part one, which covers the first five chapters, is prepare the way for truth. One of them is I think we encountered this a lot is how can I believe in truth when it's intolerant to say someone is wrong? It seems like that happens all the time.
Amen. That's the major hang-up. You know, in fact, in the Family Policy Institute of Washington's video put out a couple of years ago, college kids say the darndest things.
I'm very familiar with that, yeah.
Amen. You know what? Well, you know, Joseph Backbone, the executive director, interviews those eight students at the University of Washington about so-called gender identity. And one of the gals responds when he asks the question, what would you say if I say I'm a female or whatever? She responds and says, I feel like that's not my place. As like another human to say someone is wrong or to draw lines or boundaries.
Yes, I remember that.
There's this fear to make a claim about objective reality to say something is right and something is wrong. And I think the reason is, guys, is because they bought into the cultural narrative that to make an absolute truth claim means you're being intolerant, mean-spirited, bigoted, you're arrogant, you're not a good person. And in fact, check this out, guys, y'all ready for this?
Yeah.
This is actually embedded in episode 3 of Star Wars, Revenge of the Sith. when Anakin says, watch this, he says, when he tells Obi-Wan Kenobi, right at the end there, he says, if you're not with me, then you're my enemy. To which Obi-Wan Kenobi responds and says, only a Sith deals in absolutes.
To deal in absolutes,
you're on the dark side. You're a bad guy. And that's exactly the narrative that our culture has constructed. So how do we respond to this? Well, first of all, as I point out in the book, guys, strategy one, we have to show that this argument from tolerance is actually, or intolerance, if you will, is self-defeating for a relativist, first of all. Because we could simply ask the relativist who's employing this argument, well, is it absolutely true that we should be intolerant? And in order to hold to the argument, the individual has to say, well, yes, of course. But notice, there's at least one absolute truth, namely, we ought to be tolerant. But that can't fit in the mental framework of relativism itself. So the relativist is either going to have to give up relativism in order to keep the objective good of tolerance, and that we all ought to be tolerant, or give up the objective good of tolerance in order to keep his relativism. He can't have both. But even more so, guys, this argument is self-defeating for the relativist, because rather than relativism promoting tolerance, relativism actually undermines tolerance itself. Why? Because we could simply ask the relativist the question, well, what if someone believes that intolerance, which you don't like, is a good thing? What if relative to their system of beliefs, they think it's a good thing to be intolerant, and from that, you know, physically coerce somebody to believe what they believe? In the mental framework of relativism, we couldn't criticize that belief because that's true for them. So rather than tolerance promoting, rather than relativism promoting tolerance, relativism actually undermines it. And here's one of the questions we could ask. How can relativism promote tolerance when its framework allows for the acceptance of an individual's belief that intolerance is a good thing? So rather than relativism being the guardian of tolerance, it turns out that relativism is tolerance's undertaker, right? So that's right. Strategy one, showing that this argument from tolerance is actually self-defeating for relativists. And then I employ a couple of other strategies, one of which shows that it's just simply a misunderstanding of tolerance, because the argument assumes that tolerance means to accept everyone's opinions as equal and valid. But guys, we don't tolerate people's beliefs that we agree with. We tolerate people's beliefs that we disagree with.
Exactly.
And to disagree with a belief necessarily presupposes that we think they're wrong.
Right, exactly.
So notice we're slapped with the label of intolerance for saying someone is wrong. But yet, saying someone is wrong belongs to the essence of tolerance. So it's fundamentally a misunderstanding of tolerance. And then finally, in strategy three, we just simply can point out for our friend that they're being inconsistent in applying his understanding of tolerance, because our friend is saying, I'm being intolerant for saying someone is wrong, but I would simply ask that person and say, well, am I wrong for believing other people's beliefs are wrong? And of course, in order to hold their argument, he's going to have to say, yeah, you're wrong. But if I'm wrong for saying that other people are wrong, well, then aren't you just as intolerant as I am?
Right. It exposes, right? You're helping them.
Right.
But through that question, you're helping expose that they're operating with some presuppositions that are incompatible with sort of a coherent, logical stance.
That's right. We want to ask these questions in a charitable way. You know, so just in conversation, listen, let me ask you this. Am I wrong for saying that other people are wrong? And if I am, well, then your principle that you're operating on and your understanding of intolerance would apply to you just as much as it applies to me. So here's what I would suggest. I would suggest that it's not intolerant to say someone is wrong in and of itself. Now, could somebody do it in a mean-spirited way and wagging their finger in the person's face, and the mode or the manner can be mean-spirited and sort of this intolerant spirit? Yeah, it can be. And in fact, I think what we can do, Tim and Kent, is help the person we're talking to and sort of help them understand that, listen, I think fundamentally what's driving this argument is fear of violence being the result of an absolute truth claim. So if we can address that fundamental assumption, that fear, I think it'll help. And here's how we can do that. We can say, listen, violence doesn't necessarily flow from making an absolute truth claim. Violence flows from a misapprehension of the truth about the dignity of the human being. Because if I'm truly tolerant, I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to say, yeah, your belief is wrong, but I'm going to respect your dignity as a human being in the process. Violence flows from some absolutists, some people who make absolute truth claims, because they may have a misapprehension about the truth of the dignity of the human being. So they physically coerce somebody to believe what they believe. And that's wrong. That's contrary to the good of the nature of the human being. So if we can help the person we're talking to understand that, that violence doesn't necessarily follow from absolute truth claims. And so you don't have to fear telling somebody they're wrong or asserting something to be true for in your mental judgment out of fear of violence ensuing. There's no need for that.
That's a great point, and it makes me think, as you were speaking, Carlo, too, I want to get your take on this. One of the obstacles or problems that we're facing, your book helps us address some of this, is that when we're engaged in these conversations with people who we have disagreements with, it seems that one of the struggles is for the person to separate who their value as a person from their position. And so when you disagree with their position, their perspective, their statement, their argument, they personalize. It's as if they process what our disagreement, let's say, as if we're attacking their personal value and worth, instead of no. Actually, what we're trying to engage them over, a logical argument or assertion or a claim that they're making, and to say that someone is mistaken in their in a claim that they're making, to me, is very different from attacking them as a person. But it seems in the current setting, though, in the contemporary setting we're in, Carlo, it seems that to disagree with someone's position, it's as if the way we're being received is as if we're saying, well, you're worthless, or you have no value, or that kind of fear that you're talking about, stoking fear or violent. You know, we're doing a kind of harm to them.
Right. Yeah, and I suppose the way to approach that, Tim, would be to simply maybe help them see that they would make the same kind of judgment and distinguish between an idea and a behavior and the person in other scenarios. So, for example, you might ask your relativist friend and say, well, listen, suppose you have a friend who is a drug addict and you see his life spiraling down, you know, just totally damaging his wife and his kids and his drug addiction. And then you can ask that person and say, okay, would you say that that is not good for him? And then, of course, I think most people would say, yeah, it's not good for that person. His addiction is not good. Abusing the substance is not good for him and for his family. And then, of course, you could proceed and say, but isn't that contrary, or doesn't that disagree with what he thinks? Because inasmuch as he's doing it, he thinks it's good. So notice there's a disagreement there. You're critiquing his behavior and his way of thinking and saying, you know what, pal, you're wrong, right? This is not good for you, whereas you think it is. Now, I would simply ask that person, are you attacking him as a person and saying he's worthless and has no value? Of course not. You're simply critiquing the behavior and the way of thinking that's leading to the behavior. So just because you have a negative judgment about an idea, a way of thinking, or the behavior, it doesn't necessarily follow that you have a negative judgment about the person and the value of his personhood, right?
Right, exactly.
And so if you can help the person, the person you're engaging in conversation with, see that he follows that principle in other areas, well, then you simply bring it back to whatever idea you're debating now or whatever behavior you're debating about now and say, listen, just because I am critiquing your way of thinking or an idea that's leading you to engage in a specific behavior, it doesn't necessarily follow that I'm attacking the value of your personhood and undermining your dignity as a human being. No, I'm attacking the way of thinking and the behavior, and I'm actually doing so because I perceive this way of thinking and this behavior that it's leading to as not good for you, as something that's going to undermine your happiness and your human flourishing. And so inasmuch as I'm attempting to help to critique this way of thinking and this behavior, to help you see the truth about the matter, it's actually motivated by love, because what is love, as Aquinas said, to will the good of another. So whatever I see you engaging in or way of thinking that's not good, well then, out of love, I'm going to try to help you change your way of thinking, change your behavior, and order your life toward which is good in order that you can be happy. And that can only be motivated by love. And of course, we have to do it in a loving way.
We are talking with Carlo Broussard from Catholic Answers. You know, Carlo, one of the words that keeps coming up in our discussion here is tolerance. And I think in today's modern parlance, we've kind of had this alteration of the meaning of tolerance to include acceptance and agreement. Whereas it is possible to tolerate something without being accepting of it or agreeing to it.
That's right, and that's one of the things gets back to what I was saying earlier in strategy two of exposing the relativist misunderstanding of tolerance, because they're approaching the conversation, right? They're coming to us with this understanding of tolerance being accepting all beliefs as equal and valid, and it's our job to simply expose that assumption and say, no, that's not what tolerance means. And you can simply ask, you know, the relativist the question, you know, do you tolerate other relativists who accept relativism? And obviously the answer is no, that doesn't make sense. You don't tolerate people's beliefs that you agree with. You only tolerate people's beliefs that you disagree with, which necessarily presupposes that you think their belief or opinion doesn't conform to reality, which is in essence saying that the belief or opinion is wrong. You think it's wrong. And so we have to try and expose this flawed understanding of tolerance. Now, another way to attack it is to just attack the idea, because they might respond and say, well, yeah, we should accept everyone's beliefs and opinions as equal and valid, and maybe they will dig their heels in and try to resort to that.
But yeah, because then that turns into, who are you to judge, Carlo? Right? It'll turn into that, right? Right?
That's right. But then we're very well, one approach could be we go back to chapter one and deal with relativism as such. So why do you think that we should accept everyone's beliefs and opinions as equal and valid? And why can't we say any of those beliefs or opinions are wrong? Oh, well, because there's no objective truth. Truth is just relative. So everybody's right. We got to accept everybody's opinion, right? Well, then we're back to chapter one and refuting relativism itself. To say there is no absolute truth is an absolute truth claim.
Right.
Because if somebody says there is no absolute truth, I can simply ask, is that absolutely true? And of course, if they say yes, well, then there's at least one absolute truth, namely, there's no absolute truth. But that violates the principle of non-contradiction, you see?
Right.
To say that it's absolutely true that there is no absolute truth. So if the proposition there is no absolute truth violates the principle of non-contradiction, therefore it's not true. So its opposite, there is absolute truth, is true. So that there is an objective truth, we know metaphysically by the natural light of human reason, it reduces itself to first principles of human knowledge. And then we're on the journey where we have to engage in the inquiry to try and find out what that truth is. Right? And so this is where the rest of the book comes in, of trying to guide and coach that person, coach the reader to guide that person in the inquiry to truth.
Yeah, and one of the terms you bring up, Carlo, too, and actually I think at the end of the book you've got an appendix kind of dedicated to this term, which is universal skepticism. I think that's closely related to what we've been talking about. But maybe could you, what do you mean by the term universal skepticism? Why is it important and what should we do about it?
Yeah, well, universal skepticism, I'll share a story with you. One time I was giving a lecture at a theology on tap in New Jersey, and a gentleman comes up to me after the lecture and says, well, you know, I doubt everything.
Right.
And to which
I blame Descartes for that, too.
Yeah, to which I responded and said, do you doubt that you doubt everything? And what was interesting is his little girlfriend standing next to him kind of chuckled because she caught it. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
She caught the incoherence of this universal skepticism of doubting everything. And even fundamentally what I do in the appendix is I try to provide you with a way by which we can defend, although we can't prove it or demonstrate it by way of a syllogism, but we can rationally defend the principle of non-contradiction. One time I was given a lecture on God and science. And a gentleman came up to me after the lecture, and in our conversation, it came to light that he was even doubting the principle of non-contradiction, which states that something cannot both be and not be in the same respect, the same place and time. And he was like, well, I don't really know if that's true. So what I do in the book is I provide you a way to rationally defend that principle to show that you cannot, it's metaphysically impossible to deny the principle of non-contradiction. Because in as much as you attempt to deny it, and you say, the principle of non-contradiction is false, you must intend to mean what you say rather than the opposite, namely, the principle of non-contradiction is true. But in as much as you do that, you're presupposing the truth of the principle.
Right.
Something cannot be and not be in the same respect, the same place and time. So you cannot deny the principle of non-contradiction without presupposing its truth. So this principle of non-contradiction is the first principle of all human reasoning. Aristotle saw it. Thomas Aquinas taught it, is that it is the starting point for all human knowledge, something that we cannot metaphysically possibly deny. It is the one absolute truth that we know for darn sure something cannot be and not be at the same respect, the same place and time. And it's on that building block that we can begin building the edifice of truth about reality, about who we are as human beings, about God, about a relationship between the two, and about the world.
Well, I'm so glad to hear you bring that up. It seems to me another... at least challenge I've come across and like to hear your strategy on this, Carlo, is let's say we've been having this conversation, the one we've been having here today in the cave, you know, maybe around, the dinner table or something like that.
Sure.
And eventually, I don't know if you've had this happen, but sometimes the person I'm engaging this type of conversation with, their eyes glaze over after a while. And they tell me their head's going to explode. They're like, okay, already, I just, they can throw kind of a sort of metaphorical white flag up, and they kind of want to retreat a little bit into, I don't want to think that this is a lot of heavy lifting intellectually. You know, this is a lot for me to consider. It kind of comes across to me as almost like a conflict avoidance, you know, that if
sure.
I really do follow the implications of what you're saying, the logical implications
right.
of what flows from what you've laid out here in the book, I'm going to have to, boy, there's a lot of implications for me. There's a lot of things that I may have to change about how I see things, how I react to things, but the choices I'm making,
sure.
and maybe some big ones. And do you find that's, you know, have you run across that, and how might we help that person if they're kind of, we've gotten to that point where like almost like intellectual overload?
Yeah, no, definitely. Both and the intellectual overload idea of throwing up the white flag and saying I'm done too much, but also too the point you bring up with the matter or the issue being. The fear of the implications that come from the truths being presented and therefore tapping out. So with regard to the first or the former, the intellectual tapping out because of the intellectual overload, I mean, I think that's legitimate, you know, I mean, because not everyone is like you and me, Tim, where we enter into the cave and, you know, we just eat and breathe philosophy, right? And
yeah, we geek out.
We think about, yeah, I mean, we totally geek out, man.
Right.
I mean, listen, I did a two-part webinar for the Institute of Catholic Culture on Aquinas' Five Ways, and for the past 2 months, I've just been immersing myself in scholarly journal articles on Aquinas' Five Ways and just totally, you know, salivating at the mouth and just like a kid in the candy shop. But I realize that not everybody is like that, and not everybody has, I mean, granted,
right,
at one
right.
time I didn't like it, and I didn't have the intellectual stamina to go through this stuff. So when you're in conversation and trying to share these things with people, if you get the sense and you discern, or the person just simply lets you know that it's a little bit too much, you know, then you have to be wise enough to let off the pedal a little bit and to back off and to recognize that, you know, too much is not good. You know, we have to be prudent in how much we give the person that we're dialoguing with. And if you have that relationship, well, then, of course, say, well, would you like to continue the conversation some other time, you know, and we can take a break, and maybe you might want to read something, and maybe next time we talk, we can talk about what you read, you know, when you have a little bit more intellectual stamina and energy. So that's possibly one way, back out. But at the same time, as every good salesperson knows, you don't let them off the hook, right? Those people come knocking on the door, asking me a question. I say no, and then they proceed with another question. They try to keep themselves at the door, right?
Sure,
and
sure.
So in a similar way, you know, we can back off, but at the same time, try to keep that connection. Now, concerning the latter, tapping out because they don't want to think about the implications of the truth that you're presenting. I think fundamentally right there, you know, guys, we're just simply dealing with the person's free will, and there's not much we can do if the person is making the act of free will and choosing to say, listen, I don't want to deal with these implications, or I'm turning the lights out type of thing. I think possibly one idea that comes to mind that we can do is to share with them and say, hey, listen, there's been a heck of a lot of people in your same shoes, who've been in your shoes in your situation, who have encountered these truths and literally had to change their lives completely, 180-degree turn, you know. But I'll tell you this, you know, they've experienced a degree of happiness that far surpasses what they've experienced without these truths and the other way of life. And so fundamentally, it's just a matter of doing what Jesus did. You can learn from the Master. And simply extend the invitation and say, come and see. You know, I've presented these truths to you, and, you know the implications of the truths, and you know, all you can do is invite them and say, come and see. And you won't know until you give it a shot. You won't know the happiness or experience the happiness that flows from living in accord with the truth until you try it and begin to do it. And so it's just a matter of extending that invitation. And then you can say, well, listen, I'm not going to, you know, obviously you're not going to change your life right here and right now at the dinner table tonight. But I just want to let you know, whenever you're ready, if you are and whenever you are, let me know. I'm here for you. I'll be here to help you walk that path and journey with you.
Well, we've been speaking with Carlo Broussard. Carlo, great job laying out some of the principles and strategies in your new book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. And we are just about out of time. Carlo, how can our audience follow you, follow your work, keep abreast of your current developments and projects?
Sure. Well, first of all, they can get the book at shop.catholic.com. There's a banner there, Prepare the Way. They just click on the banner, and they'll take you straight to the page where you can purchase the book.
I highly recommend it.
Thank you very much. Yeah. They can follow my work at carlobroussard.com. So everything I do is at catholic.com, but there's so much content that we produce at Catholic Answers that it sort of gets lost in there. So for a one-stop shop of all of the work, my articles, video, audio, etc., is found at carlobroussard.com. And, of course, they can always follow me on Facebook and Twitter.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again, Carlo, so much for coming into the Catholic Cave. We're going to have
you
back
really
soon.
Amen. I look forward to it, guys.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
You have a voice in your head. How did he know that, the voice just said? Because we all do. And the words you speak to yourself matter a lot. Our words shape our self-perception. Our self-perception shapes our actions. Our actions shape our lives. Words are at the foundation of our whole lives. What words do you speak to yourself? The book of Revelations calls the devil the accuser of our brothers. He wants us to amplify the negative words in our heads. God reveals the truth about who we are. But he didn't do that so you'd wait for me to preach it to you. Preach it to yourself. When the voice within starts saying, I'm weak, used, washed up, not pretty enough, skinny enough, smart enough, I'll never be enough. Replace that with words like, I'm blessed, I'm chosen, I'm beautiful. I am a son or daughter of the King of Heaven. I don't mean that figuratively, I mean it literally. Look in the mirror and preach the truth to yourself. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com.
Most of us like to keep up on what's going on in the world and try to catch a little news each day. Did you know that you can catch the very latest Catholic news right on our website? We have news from Rome, from around the world, and here at home, updated every day so you always know what's going on from a Catholic perspective. Check it out. Go to CatholicRadioIndy.org and look for the Catholic news headlines. There's always something new at CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. That was a great conversation we just had with Carlo Broussard about his new book, Prepare the Way. You know, he's covered a lot of ground, a lot of things like that. And if you listen to Catholic radio on a regular basis, he's a familiar voice. And yes, especially here on Catholic Radio Indy, we run his Carlo Broussard's Ready Reasons on a regular basis. Great little pieces. You know,
how many are there? There's a bunch of them.
We currently have a library of 42, and I know there are more out there to be downloaded. Wow. So we're going to take a look at those. But I want to share with you just one of those. And this would be kind of an example of his approach through what he does in his book, Prepare the Way. And we'll be back to wrap it up right after this. This is Carlo Broussard's Ready Reason.
A while back, I had a nice little chat with some Jehovah Witness ladies, and they tried to justify their claim to be Christian by saying the early Christians didn't believe Jesus was God. Is this true? Well, of course not. Let me share a few examples. Take John 1:1, where John describes Jesus as the Word and writes the Word was God. Now, in order to get around this, the JWs translate the phrase as the Word was a God, but this is based on a misunderstanding of Greek grammar. Consider also Colossians 2:9, where St. Paul writes, "For in him, that is Jesus, the whole fullness of deity dwells bodily." In 1 Corinthians 8:6, Paul describes Jesus as the one through whom we exist. Isn't God the one ultimately responsible for the existence of things? So, contrary to what the JWs think, to be Christian, you must believe Jesus is God. I'm Carlo Broussard with a Ready Reason for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
That was Carlo Broussard's Ready Reason. A lot of those you're going to hear here on Catholic Radio Indy. Tim, what's your last thoughts on this one?
Well, I just want to, again, thank Carlo for coming into the Catholic Cave. Great example of, you know, what it means to be a Catholic apologist, right? Apology meaning, of course, having a ready defense for the faith. You know, as Catholics, we don't take things on blind faith. There's a good reason why we believe what we believe, why Holy Mother Church teaches what she teaches. So, and in this day and age, Kent, we have all kinds of resources to better equip ourselves with sets of knowledge and understanding around the faith. Carlo Broussard's a great asset to us, and thank him for his study and his putting together this book. We'll have to have him back again real soon. He's really a joy to have on the show.
Yep, we'll have to bring him back soon. And the one thing to remember in all of this is the fact that when we're talking about Christ, when we're evangelizing out there, we have the reasons, but we need to do it with love. And that's the way we're going to wrap it up for the Cave for this week. I'm Kent Blanford for Timothy O'Donnell. Until next time, May God bless.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.